Oh. So I am gonna my talk today is gonna be a contrast to my first talk about that was my first talk was about light and gratitude. And today I am actually going to bring a type of suffering that is not often illuminated, maybe exactly because it's rather dark. And I'm also going to touch on the subject of suicide. Because of my own autism, I'm close to the subject I'm going to talk about. And I'm writing this first, no, not first, this talk, second talk actually. For, first and foremost, that's what I meant to say, in the spirit of inclusiveness and interconnection. As the Genjo Koan tells us, in the world of forms, one side is illuminated and the other side is not. Over the years, each time I hear about Omi, Shunryu Suzuki's youngest daughter, the strings of my heart are deeply moved. And I even made up a word to remember her name at all time, all often, bringing it up easy. And that word is the omitted. Because, each time I think of all these omitted people whose physical and mental suffering causes havoc in their life. Omi was put away in an institution after the death of her mother, and 12 years later killed herself. According to her eldest sister, Omi was schizophrenic, which is yet another neurodiverse condition. I am autistic, which is different, and also has some commonalities, common factors, such as a different nervous system and probably the presence of mental anguish. Many people use neurodiversity as an umbrella term used to describe alternative thinking styles, such as dyslexia, dyspraxia, all these words. Dyscalculia, autism, and ADHD. Now, the basic idea of neurodiversity is that there is no correct way for the brain to work, and differences don't have to only be looked at as weaknesses. They're not just problems that need to be fixed or cured. So, I'm going to start with the 1994 interview that David Chadwick conducted. Well, in Japanese, so there was a translator to help later. Or I don't know, maybe there. He interviewed Omi's older sister. And what I'm going to read now is posted on David Chadwick's website, which is cuke.com. My little sister, Omi, died in Showa 39, 1964. She was at a sensitive age when my mother died. She loved our mother very much and was the most attached to her. I was away from home, going to a university in Tokyo for 2 years, and she felt lonely. She was delicate, sensitive, loved music and drawing. My little sister never got over my mother's death. The shock on her was harder then to me. She became schizophrenic. So in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, Shunryu Suzuki writes, well, I'll read it in French first, it's only three lines, so. Vous pensez peut-être que lorsque vous mourrez, vous disparaissez, vous n'existez plus. Mais même si vous vous évanouissez, ce qui est existant ne peut devenir inexistant. You may think that when you die, you disappear, you no longer exist. But even though you vanish, something which is existent cannot be non-existent. Now, I'm lucky I was born later than Omi. In fact, I was born exactly the year she died, 1964. And by then, things had started a little bit to change in the field of neurodiversity. And I was very lucky. I was not diagnosed yet. So, and my father always was supporting, even though my mother did not. So I was not sent to an institution forever. And thus eventually stumbled upon Zen practice. As I wrote or said earlier, 12 years after being in the mental institution, Omi hanged herself. Suicide rates are much higher in neurodiverse populations. The possibility of falling in the abysses of the mind exists in all who have a brain. We often take our brain and bodies for granted. But the brain is just like any other organ, with a big difference. It's extremely complex. So much so that we have not been able to plumb all the way to the end of its depths. And I personally doubt we will ever do so. And just like with any other organ, something may go wrong with the brain. We have very little control over that. In my lifetime, I have again and again fallen into an abyss of my mind. And each time it was extremely painful and disruptive, both to all who happened to witness it, and oftentimes had a part in it too, and mostly for me. Sometimes it resulted in self-injury, heavy crying, suicide thoughts, and a state of despair that sometimes lasted for several days. I do not know exactly how this stopped for me. All I know is that my practice of Zazen is at the root of my coming back on track, along with many other things like proper diagnosis, medical and financial help, and getting older. In endurance, I'm so fortunate that as a teenager, I often ran to my room when I felt that a meltdown was about to happen. That way there was no one to witness it and panic. And also, I was very fortunate about that. Many troubled children do not have the privilege of going to their own room. And when meltdowns happen, it can be so scary that sometimes the parents or others who witness it may attempt to control it with coercive means. And this only makes things worse. in my experience, but also in that of many other autistic people I know or have read about. So the idea of killing myself has been with me many times. And when I was 20, I tried more seriously with the barbiturates my medical boyfriend got in large quantity for my epilepsy. Several times in my younger life, I acted so incomprehensibly that I have been the one kind of foaming at the mouth in anger while being forcefully restrained. Now, thankfully, once my son was born and I started to practice, I realized I could not do that to him or to anybody for that matter. And I'm just telling you this so you learn about the gravity of some neurodiverse conditions and others too. The person right next to us may look fine on the outside, we're often so quick to label one another. So in another interview by David Chadwick, and this time that was his Shunryu Suzuki's younger son, who is in United States, so that was in English, and Omi, he describes her as being hostile. Now, this is a terrible word for people like me because it often leads to landing in an institution where the person might be forced to take mind-destroying medicine or whatever allows to tame them like wild horses. And they might lose their intellectual ability in that process. And I'm not saying that medicine cannot be helpful at times, and I am a living proof of that too. Now, I love Shunryu Suzuki's quote, to give your sheep or cow a large, spacious meadow is the way to control him. And at the same time, in the usual Zen paradoxical way, we need to totally give up the idea of controlling anyone and anything, and instead give the gift of stability, including financial one. Lucky me, I now know that I too am the mulch the world is made of. And I don't know how to express all this yet so well, but since you also suffer in your way. I mean, we all do. You get my gist, I'm pretty sure. Okay, another book of Shunryu Suzuki is entitled Branching Streams Flow in the Darkness. Now, that's a sentence taken from the Sandokai, and it's often translated as harmony of difference and equality. That was a poem by the 8th century Zen master Sekito Kizen. On the insert at the beginning of the book is a quote saying that the poem addresses the question of the oneness of things and the multiplicity of things that coexist. And to me, the poem seems also to be an attempt to bring a kind of reconciliation of darkness and light. In fact, Michael Wenger writes, the Sandokai addresses the division between the northern and southern schools as well as other dichotomies, such as one and many, light and darkness, sameness and difference. The sentence, branching streams flow in the darkness, probably has a different meaning for each of us. It seems to me that neurodivergences, like Omi's and mine, are branching stream, flowing sometimes in the darkness. The meaning I give this sentence, branching streams flow in the darkness, is that of a human life, each human being a stream who branches off when born on this earth, only to return to a larger body like the vast ocean at death. And then there is the word flow and darkness. Now, it is from the muddy, dark waters that the lotus rises. And with flow, it happens again and again sometimes. Kind of repetition at infinity. I just love how in Zen practice, both light and dark are spoken about, not just light. And also, not just darkness is not just spoken about, it is actually revered as much and seen as important, like the front and back foot in walking. Now, I'm just going to add a little something about myself, about darkness. It is that I'm more sensitive to darkness, but not just mental darkness. And in fact, I literally live in darkness. I mean, I don't turn light very much on, and I do not like the light right now on me. But I'm lucky because I can do it now. In my apartments, oh, I wanted to say I'm very fortunate because I have a partner who not only does he completely gets it, but he actually often helps me to dim or shut down lights. So in my apartment, lights are usually dim, and I have to put black tape on many electronic bright little lights, you know, those little lights. Now, when I am in a hotel or a new place, I mean, our first order of things is often to unplug or turn the other way, TV and clocks blinkering lights. Now, during sessions, that's another one, right? I have to memorize the session or hotel. I often have to memorize the restroom layout but beforehand. And sometimes I leave the door to the lighted hallway slightly opened, and the person before me can be very surprised. Or after me, rather. Sometimes they want to be polite and they leave the light on, and they're really surprised when I really quickly turn it off. And by the way, that's also because of this challenge that I turn my back away from the computer. Usually, you may have noticed during Zazen that I face the other way. And in fact, when the practice period is over, I rarely join the EDZ online morning Zazen, even though I'm sitting at home. Now, another sentence from Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Well, actually, a whole paragraph. Each existence depends on something else. Strictly speaking, there are no separate individual existences. There are just many names for one existence. Sometimes people put stress on oneness, but this is not our understanding. We do not emphasize any point in particular, even oneness. Oneness is valuable, but variety is also wonderful. Ignoring variety, people emphasize the one absolute existence. But this is a one-sided understanding. In this understanding, there is a gap between variety and oneness. but oneness and variety are the same thing. So oneness should be appreciated in each existence. That is why we emphasize everyday life rather than some particular state of mind. We should find the reality in each moment and in each phenomenon. This is a very important point. Shunryu Suzuki coming to America was also home leaving, written large. Home leaving is a very controversial topic, especially when there are children involved. Some people have a vision that takes them away from their home. I mean, think Buddha, think Shunryu Suzuki, and probably think of someone in your environment. I have many in my environment. In fact, I too was a home leaver for my first 3 years in California, including my time at Green Gulch Farm. And during that time, my son lived with his father in Illinois. This was the most painful separation in my life. I had to put on my sunglasses quite often to hide my tears each time I saw a kid his age. At the same time, that is what set me on the path of Zazen and Zen. Everything is so mingled. It's astonishing, really. Let us have compassion in this home living domain, too. My focus today on neurodivergence and inclusiveness just reflects my own emotional bond to this particular type of suffering. It's the little light I shine on one corner of the world, which is also what a sentence Shunryu Suzuki said, and it is found in David Chadwick's book titled Crooked Cucumber. It was a lecture that he gave in 1971. We say to shine one corner of the world, one corner, just one corner. So if you know, shine one corner, then people around you will feel better. Suffering is universal. That was the end of the quote, by the way. Better. Now that's me again. Suffering is universal, and we each might have a kind of emotional bond to a particular type of suffering, one we have been especially touched by. Let's remember that in the end, we all experience suffering that comes with the gift of life. And you know, small or great, visible or invisible, near or far, may all beings be free from suffering. A practice suggestion is, if you ever find yourself in an abyss of the mind, by all means, reach out to the Sangha and experienced teachers. In the darkest time, it may not seem that Zazen or practice generally is helping at all, but it is. And other people can help you remember that, though. It could be both sides too. I know. I like how Chogyam Trungpa puts it. Meditation is simply the creation of a space in which we're able to expose and undo our neurotic habits, our self-deceptions. We provide space through the simple discipline of doing nothing. And another quote from Shunryu Suzuki in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Because we put emphasis on some particular point, we always have trouble. We should accept things just as they are. This is how we understand everything and how we live in this world. This kind of experience is something beyond our thinking. In the thinking realm, there is a difference between oneness and variety. But in actual experience, variety and unity are the same. Because you create some idea of unity or variety, you're caught by the idea. That's the end of the quote. And I'll just say again how grateful I am that I found this beautiful practice and that I have been graced with the ability to stick with it. I mean, I even experience joy sometimes these days. And that's in part due to the sufferings of the past. Omi's story is tragic, and yet Shunryu Suzuki coming here saves me. Yet Shunryu Suzuki could not save his own child. Of course, it's natural to want to see some good or light in Omi's terrible suffering, but her suffering was real, and nothing we can say will erase it. I can't help but feel that Suzuki, her father, must have been powerfully motivated by a certain helplessness about Omi's suffering, and that this may have made him redouble his efforts in practice. And that effort brought Zazen to me. This, of course, makes me think of Indra's net, how we're all so connected, and how interdependency is also inclusiveness of everything and everyone around us. Shunryu says in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, the world is its own magic. Oh, and I'll give you its French translation, which I'm not so keen about. It's just voilà la magie. And now I'm going to end with the last stanza of a poem that Jean sent me. It's called A Blessing for Traveling in the Dark by Jan Richardson. Richardson. But this is what I can ask for you. That in the darkness there be a blessing. That in the shadows there be a welcome. That in the night you be encompassed by the love that knows your name. And that was the end of my talk for today. Exactly 30 minutes. Now, before we go in our groups and I give you a little something to, I don't know, think upon, I have two announcements. And let's hope people who are not staying for groups hear them. First is that there is a class. Oh, shoot, I did not copy the whole thing. Well, anyway, it's on the website. It's a new class called, well, it's on the book What is Zen? By Sue Moon and Norman. And this class is, I'm part of it with many others, and I have been in the preparation stages, and I'm telling you, it's going to be great. Anyway, it's on the website, how to register and all that. And the second announcement is to remind you that we will be sitting in person for an all-day sit at Gringosh on Saturday. Okay, so we actually can have groups that for about what, 20 minutes each? What do you think, Maya? Yeah. So here's the question that I thought we could talk about. Is do you have an emotional bond with a particular form of suffering? And if you don't, it's something else. Okay? So I guess I'll see you in about 20 minutes.